Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm joined today by Wayne Stanley, Head of Communications and Policy in the Simon Communities, Rosemary Hennigan, Policy Coordinator for Focus Ireland, and John Mark McCafferty, the CEO of Threshold. If you do enjoy Reboot Republic, we are the podcast that brings you the experts, the experience and the voices of the front line and ideas for social change. Please support us to continue to producing these podcasts. Go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, sign up and support us to keep going. Today, we're discussing the issue, a really important issue of COVID renters and evictions. And in particular, there has been calls for an extension of the ban on evictions, or moratorium as it's referred to, on evictions, that was put in place to cover the level 5 kilometre restricted in this current lockdown. Now, it's due to be lifted in a few weeks' time again, and we could see renters being evicted into homelessness, been put into insecurity in the run-up to Christmas. There's just been research published from the US showing that evictions actually contribute to spreading COVID, and that putting a ban in place on evictions actually can help prevent the spread of COVID. And there's a ban on evictions in place in the US until December. First, if I go to you, John Mark, maybe, what do you think would be gained or could be gained by extending? I know Threshold have called for this, an extension of the moratorium on evictions.
The moratorium earlier this year, and indeed the moratorium currently, meant that many families and individuals who are renting and would have been worried about losing their home and at risk of losing their home, there was a stay on that, and there was a very clear protection afforded to many families at a time of great uncertainty to everyone, and an income loss to many. And I think it's important to note that, you know, when you look at the sectors and the jobs affected most by COVID and the restrictions as a result of COVID-19, it disproportionately affects renters, younger people, people in the service economy, the hospitality sector, other sectors. And so we needed decisive action. We got a level of decisive action back in late March. We've had a number of different approaches since then, but I think it's important to say that the moratoria brought in some level of security for the periods that they've been they have applied. And I think as a society, if we're committed to equality in its broadest sense, and I think Ireland has kind of flown many flags of equality in recent years, I think that equality extends beyond a number of limited causes to a kind of a broad mandate, including tenants in the private rented sector. They need to know their homes are secure, and we believe in Threshold that the moratorium should be extended, perhaps up to 6 months, given that while we've got great news recently in relation to a possible vaccine, there's still a huge level of uncertainty in terms of the economy, in terms of jobs, in terms of the issues facing private renters. And so if we extend that moratorium out, then at least people have certainty and they can plan and they have that cover if they lose work, or if they're moving from work to the pandemic unemployment payment. So I think in the long term, the legislation that allows a tenant to be evicted for, say, no wrongdoing on the basis of a certain landlord's intention, all of that needs to be overhauled. So in a sense, the moratoria shows us what can be possible in a health crisis, because we've been having a housing crisis for the last 5-6 years, right? But this points to what's possible when you do intervene with more direct legislation in this area.
And in that, in terms of Threshold, because I know the minister speaking in the both Dáil and the Shannon referred to kind of there wasn't this kind of wave of evictions after the initial kind of moratorium was lifted. What have you seen in terms of, you know, renters and what they're experiencing, you know, in a practical level in the recent months since that initial ban was lifted? and it's become more focused on those who are in arrears as a result of COVID?
Sure. I mean, what we did see, and first of all, what we did see during the moratorium, the initial moratorium, was that there were certain illegal evictions which did take place. And I think that's, while there was very few of them, where it did happen, they were extremely stressful and problematic for the families and the individuals concerned. And then when the moratorium ended, we did see an increase in evictions happening, as you'd expect. But it's the whole period is a period of great uncertainty. And while you have to respond according to those changed conditions, and every week seems to be a year in the kind of social and economic life of the country and in the world right now. But in saying that, that level of precarity, that level of uncertainty, that's been the lived experience of families and individuals who rent in the private rented sector since 2014, when rent started to increase, where we've seen, not only rents increasing, but also evictions increasing from the time of like 2016 onwards, when we saw sales increasing and therefore people losing their homes because of certain reasons at the behest of landlord decisions. So we did see an increase once the moratorium ended. I guess this year has been a very unusual year in housing and in the private rented sector. Things are generally a bit more subdued. But I think what's striking is that the recent figures from Daft show that despite the economic downturn, despite everything that's happened in terms of all the various economic sectors, we're still seeing increases in rent, which points to an abject lack of supply across all tenures, but in particular in terms of renting and any kind of affordable renting. And that's the context that families and individuals who are renting privately are facing, that level of uncertainty, that level of precarity. So anything that we can do to kind of protect them and kind of give them a kind of a line of sight which says, okay, for the time being and for the next 6 months, we're going to do everything in our power to protect you so that you can plan, and that would I think greatly benefit many people right now.
Great, John Mark, thanks. No, I think that sets it out in terms of a context quite well. Rosemary Hennigan from Focus Ireland, what in terms of Focus is Focus seeing around homelessness and evictions, and how are kind of our evictions contributing to homelessness?
So I suppose over the years we've seen that the private rental sector is the primary pathway into homelessness, for this crisis at least. And as you know, I mean, the housing crisis hasn't gone away, so there is, to a degree, it's back to business as usual for a lot of families. I suppose what we're always looking at is what might happen, and the uncertainty, which I think John Mark has mentioned, is always there. And having something like a moratorium in place just gives families that little bit of breathing space, particularly when there is, all of those concerns with public health, with the economy the way it is, all of those kind of huge pressures on people at the moment. So all of that is contributing to your situation in a negative way anyway. And if you add to that uncertainty around your home, I think there is... It's a horrible situation to be in. I think one of the reasons why there might be a bit of a slow consequence as we emerge out of the moratorium might be that there are longer notice periods in place at the moment. So it won't be an immediate thing, but it might be that over the next kind of few months and the next year, we start to see an uptick in homelessness again. And we hope that's not the case, but it's certainly from our perspective, it was quite enough over the summer, but it has definitely picked up in the last few weeks and months.
And that is like clearly Focus is in favour as well, and is calling for an extension on that moratorium. Would that be right?
Yeah, we are, absolutely. And we have from the start. I mean, it's not a kind of a silver bullet in terms of the homeless crisis, but it has helped, certainly. And, you know, it does give people a little bit of breathing space. As I said, you know, there's enough going on without also having to worry about your housing situation. But as well as that, I mean, it's been the only concrete inflection point that you can point to, which has had a real impact on the numbers coming down. It's been a turning point. It's kind of plateaued at this point, but we did see a sharp decrease of in and around 1,000 people between February and March, April. It's then kind of plateaued, but that's quite a sizable amount. So the total number of individuals in emergency accommodation fell by 14%. So that's the lowest level since December 2017. Families in emergency accommodation fell by 30%. Children fell by 26%. So there are kind of reasons to think that this has had an impact and that we can hopefully build on it. And in terms of exits from homelessness as well, I think having that moratorium in place gave local authorities and gave homeless services, again, a little bit of breathing space to be able to work on moving people out of emergency accommodation and taking advantage of short-term lettings which may come onto the market. We've definitely seen that in Dublin. I think outside of Dublin, the situation hasn't been quite as positive in terms of the numbers coming down. And as that DAFT report showed yesterday, rents are still very, very high and maintaining themselves at that high state outside of Dublin in particular.
Yeah, and clearly, like, you know, Focus is still seeing, there's still, you know, thousands of children in homelessness and their families like that. And clearly you would think that any measure that could reduce it at whatever level should be put in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the majority of exits were that did happen over that period were in Dublin. So there was about 3,283 people were housed, which is a huge number of people when you think about it. And that was done very quickly. We saw the local authorities, we saw homeless services, we saw all of the agencies kind of come together very quickly and try and move on this. And that was great. It was great to have that energy. It was great to have that sense of constructive kind of collaboration. And it did make an impact. So what we really want to see is building on that as we kind of emerge out of COVID and saying, well, what more can we do? Can we be ambitious about this? Because I think for a number of years, we were sort of seeing the numbers tick up and there was a sense of sort of a real sense of negativity. I think that people were thinking, we're not going to get out of this quickly. It's all about supply. And it is hugely about supply, but there are things that we can do. And I think we need to kind of be more more aspirational in that respect. So the ban is only one thing that we can do. I don't think it's that silver bullet, but it does help. And I think particularly while the public health crisis remains as severe as it is, this really should be in place and it should be something which we're thinking of in terms of the longer kind of period of time than just this immediate, you know, as most extreme crisis, that we're thinking about it in terms of, well, can we put in place this little bit of certainty in the same way that we have, say, with the COVID payment and with the temporary wage subsidy? You know, there's been a period of time there where that's kind of created some certainty, and we need to do the same thing, I think, for people facing homelessness and eviction.
Yeah, no, I think you're right that it's, you know, it's not a silver bullet, but clearly, you know, it has and has had, and, you know, you've set it out, an impact in reducing homelessness and in preventing it. And I think that you're right to compare, you know, things like the support or the support payments, that these would be put in place over the period. And do you think, Wayne, I know the Simon community similarly has called for this, and you, Wayne Stanley from the Simon communities, you know, you lobbied and put a proposal into the government, I think around, if I'm correct, around the time when it was voting a few weeks ago, to actually put in an amendment that it would be extended to 6 months, that really we should be looking beyond just kind of this immediate lockdown period, that, you know, while we're in this pandemic public health crisis, regardless of what level we're in, that there should be a moratorium on evictions in place. Would you agree? And why do you think that is?
So what we proposed was, and I think it's in line with what all both Threshold and Focus have been saying as well, is that it's a 6 month extension. I think what Rosemary was saying is very important, is it's not a silver bullet. And in fact, I think some of our concerns is that actually what it does, which is really important, is that it prevents people having to cross the threshold of a homeless service. And in the current issue where we're seeing these peaks and troughs in COVID, that's a really important public health issue as well as a homeless issue, because you were citing the research from the US, but it makes perfect sense that, you know, services are going to come under pressure if we start to see the flow of homelessness get back to pre-pandemic levels. So we need to guard against that to protect people who are currently experiencing homelessness and people who are at risk. What it's also shown, which I think is something we need to build on, and I think, again, John Mark and Rosemary have been making these points, is it has shown us the power of prevention. There are an awful lot, there's an awful, a huge amount of good work happening on the ground already. The reason why we saw those homeless numbers go down is NGOs like Focus and Simon and Threshold continue to work really hard throughout the pandemic. Local authorities continue to work really hard to help us to provide the accommodation and move people on. The moratorium meant that there wasn't as many people coming in, so we were able to see a reduction in the total number of people in homelessness. That's not to say that there weren't people still presenting to homeless services over all of that period. There was. They just weren't presenting in as great a number. And that's, I think, is another important point to make, is that what the moratorium, it didn't cure homelessness, but it did is give us more breathing space. It meant that homelessness wasn't at the pace that it was pre-pandemic. Mm. And that means we can keep people safer. So that's the first reason to do it, is that it'll actually keep us safe while we're dealing with the full consequences of the pandemic. Beyond that, it shows us that prevention is going to be really important, and we need to continue to expand our prevention. And again, if we have the moratorium for the next 6 months, we can actually look at that and start bolstering the preventative work that's already going on and build that up. It also gives local authorities, approved housing bodies, and the building sector more breathing space to really start to get these projects up and running and create some of that housing infrastructure that we need to deal with homelessness. Yeah. The other thing I would say is in terms of people not, you know, there hasn't been this huge influx of people when the first moratorium was lifted, is that, one, we have to be careful because what the last moratorium did, and what indeed what this one does, is put a pause. So there wasn't a huge well of people who were ready to come into homelessness the moment that it was lifted. And that was, to be fair to the government, that was because they structured the moratorium as a pause, which meant that there wasn't that. So they anticipated that kind of falling off the cliff phenomena happening. Yeah. So there was a period of grace that people had the other side of it. The other thing is what we're seeing around the country is a number of people who are simply overholding. And landlords are just accept that we're in a really difficult situation and aren't necessarily pushing people into homelessness.
Yeah.
There's a number of kind of systems that we see. Again, some of the really good work that Focus have done on family homelessness has shown that at these kind of times of crisis, extended family pick up the slack and they pull people in. Now, I anticipate that there is a certain amount of that happening, where rather than see a family member go into homeless service, they're actually coming in the way that we do around Christmas time or at other periods, where people are prevented from going into homelessness because family rally around them to some degree. But those often put huge pressure on families and individuals, and that it isn't sustainable into the long term. I'd also say that number, particularly Galway, Simon, they have seen as many people this year as they did last year. But all of their preventative services, and I'm sure John Mark will say the same for Threshold, are working equally as hard as they did last year, when the numbers in the sort of the monthly count we do of homelessness was much higher. But the workload hasn't decreased because the preventative work still needs to be happening. And that says to me that, you know, there's still a well or an imbalance there that we need to be mindful of. Yeah. So that's why I think the moratorium, it does two things. One, it gives us a bit more breathing space, and it will keep people safe in the context of the flux in the COVID crisis as we see it, and it'll keep people safe because we've done really well as homeless services, local authorities, HSE and NGOs, to keep people largely keeping COVID out of services. But nobody can be complacent about that. I mean, there's a lot of these things that are congregated settings, and, you know, we need to mind people.
Yeah, no, I think that makes absolute sense. And I think the framing of that, I think, was very interesting about giving space and breathing space to both services and housing providers, and obviously, as John Mark was talking about as well, the families, the individuals themselves who are facing that, to be able to try and get through this period. It seems utterly, I don't understand. And I didn't fully understand or see the rationale, and maybe John Mark, you could help me understand this a bit better, for why the minister didn't, you know, extend this by 6 months. And, you know, we know the constitution was cited, but it didn't seem to me that, even in itself, doesn't seem sufficient for a short term measure like 6 months. Like, why do you think it wasn't extended?
I think there's a real reluctance to for legislation to somehow place impositions on the use of private property. Fundamentally, we have a very conservative approach to the Constitution generally. Even when you're trying to balance that with the public good, that's seen as a bit amorphous in a lot of kind of debate, unfortunately. And so anything which kind of somehow impinges on private property is seen as the least desirable option. And I think in order to kind of design and implement legislation this year, it was very much from the point of view of the public health advice and you know that these things would come into play when you had severe restrictions in the wider economy. Right now it's 5K. I guess when we started back in the first moratorium, a kind of a 2K limit had come in. So that's very much in play. I guess there are other forces and factors at play than ourselves, than the good people of Simon and Focus and Threshold and other organisations and indeed local authorities working to prevent homelessness and to provide supply. There are other groups that are advocating for different approaches, and those groups have a level of heft and a level of influence.
You would be talking about who there, the Landlords Association, or do you think building or construction or who, or investors or?
Landlords, you know, are clearly a key stakeholder here. There is a general kind of tone to these discussions outside of our respective communities, which are very much about not impinging on those on the private properties and the kind of the rights and the benefits that they imbue to the owner. So I think those factors are at play very much this year, and yet we've seen that there can be interventions. You know, the rent pressure zones are very much an example of that. The Tyrrellstown Amendment in the same piece of legislation back in late 2016 was bold in some respects, in the sense that there was a limit to which someone could sell off a number of private rented sector houses or apartments in one fell swoop. But that came to pass because of a very, very difficult situation facing a community there in Dublin 15. So I guess any government is, in fairness to them, trying to balance a number of quite often diametrically opposed needs and wants. And I suppose this is what they've come up with, is a series of moratoria that were time bound. And I guess tenants, private rented tenants, have been protected, as both Rosemary and Wayne have said, principally because of the notice periods. So the people, you know, might have commenced the notice period, and then it was paused, and then it was re-triggered again when they came out of that legislation, only to be paused again with one of or one of the two new pieces of legislation since August. You know, especially now in relation to the current moratorium. So there's a balancing act clearly that the state is involved in, and is trying to make a call every couple of weeks. And there's a challenge there for the sector as well, to kind of both try and kind of impact and influence the legislation as it emerges, as it evolves, as it's being drafted, and also trying to explain and make sense of the legislation that's finally arrived at, and to kind of then communicate that to, say, our advisors and thresholds, to then be in a position to adequately and accurately communicate that to private renters who are still worried about their home and have all sorts of queries in relation to the impacts of the prolonged impact of COVID. And I guess what's important to say is that notwithstanding the moratoria, notwithstanding things like the rent supplement being made available, I think there's a couple of things to say. One is that not all renters that had a drop in income knew about the rent supplement. I think that's borne out in the kind of the relatively low levels of take up of it.
Yeah.
And I think secondly, more in terms of the wider economy, we're not through the woods yet. We don't know how long the current restrictions generally will last. You know, we'll be out of level five hopefully in December, but you know, we could be
back in it again,
swinging in and out of these various restrictions, right? That has an impact on a prolonged impact on the economy. It has an impact on these sectors, which I've said have disproportionately affected households who are renting.
So there's
big, big challenges there for people who are trying to budget. They've maybe used their savings now, so maybe come 2021 they've fewer options. And I guess as Rosemary and Wayne have said, that's why the importance of our respective prevention services really come to the fore, in our advice services, in terms of protecting people, advising people, informing people of the emerging kind of scenario.
Yeah, and just on that, in terms of threshold, like, what are you seeing around the wider issues of rent arrears? And like, do you foresee we're building up like significant issues? And obviously people are in crisis in terms of the unemployment, particularly around the rent arrears issue. Do you think we're building it up as a serious problem coming in maybe next year? Or
yeah, that's our concern. I mean, obviously there's two pieces of legislation sitting, I don't know, side by side, one on top of the other. You know, one was around arrears, and there have been very few cases coming through that arrears process, primarily because if a landlord wants to trigger an eviction based on arrears, by virtue of triggering that, they are going through quite a prolonged process. And that, I guess, that's partly the intention of the legislation, right?
Yeah.
So few people are going down that road. They may use some other alternative grounds on which to end an eviction. You now have the moratorium. Come 2021, it's a bit like, you know, the recession 10 years ago. People use what resources they had. Generally, you know, renters on lower incomes won't have necessarily the savings or the assets that other groups might have at their disposal, and they may have exhausted those. Notwithstanding, you know, things like the pandemic unemployment payment and rent supplement. I think it's a process that really needs to be closely monitored, and we need to see what the impacts of the ending of the legislation, assuming and what the moratorium doesn't continue after the beginning of December. We need to just closely monitor what the impacts and the consequences are of that on renters.
Yeah.
Because they may need, and we've been advocating for this, a number of different supports in relation to minding those arrears. Because remember, there was a huge apparatus built up around homeowners who got into difficulty in the last recession. And understandably and rightly so, those supports should be in place. We just don't have a culture which appreciates that similar economic circumstances can have similarly catastrophic outcomes for families as well as individuals who are renting and who are, for whom it's losing their home is much more of an immediate prospect than it is for a homeowner. So we need a balance of approach and a balance of policy and also a balance of legislation to ensure an improved tenancy protection environment.
Yeah, no, I think that's you know, true that in terms of that, the renters, the if you contrast, and you've made this point before, the contrast of protection of renters versus protection of homeowners. And that's not to say, you know, the point is renters should have protections and should have that. It is their home just as it is a homeowner's home. And I think that is the major policy shift that's required. Thanks, John Mark. Rosemary, in terms of like, is Focus worried that, you know, what John Mark has referred to as that kind of build-up, you know, of rent arrears, that with this lifting of the evictions ban, that it opens up, that people will be made homeless as a result of the lifting of this evictions ban?
Yeah, no, we are very concerned. I mean, it's partly the eviction ban. It's partly the kind of broader economic and social situation that people are in. So, you know, it's things like electricity costs as well. It's things like pressure for HAP tenants to pay top-ups, which may be increasingly unsustainable. We're not seeing rents come down. So we're seeing incomes hit, but we're not seeing equivalent rental decrease. And we're also, I mean, the CSO had data out a couple of weeks ago, which showed that renters are now, there's a growing proportion of renters who are at risk of poverty. And that's because we have a kind of, because we haven't had social housing, because our social housing stock has been so, so low. Instead, we've been using HAP and we've been using rent supplement. We've been using all of these other mechanisms to accommodate people in the private rental sector. But that means that a category of renters are very vulnerable. And are at high risk of homelessness. Mm. And that's, again, where our prevention services come in and where we're always trying to work with people. But it's very difficult when your guarantees in terms of tenure and all of that are much weaker than if you were in, you know, local authority accommodation or whatever else. So, yes, we are very worried is the short answer. We don't see that kind of supply increasing very quickly. And we know that COVID had an impact on that. And we know that the budget and this government has committed to public building, which is very important, and we're glad to hear it. But housing, it's the nature of housing that it takes time for these things to happen. And we're still at that stage where we're not getting enough of a stock there to compensate. So instead, we're still relying on the private rental sector, which, as we know, is still under huge pressure. And there's just an increasingly vulnerable population of people who are now renting and who don't have the benefit of those securities, which Jean-Marc referred to. So, you know, it's just the reality that the housing crisis hasn't gone away. And all of the moratorium really does is it gives us a little bit of space to try and kind of catch up in those other areas and to try and put the right kind of prevention mechanisms in place for people. But, I mean, what we really need to be doing is identifying who is at risk and what can we do to intervene good and early and before it becomes a crisis so that we can prevent them going into homelessness. And I think part of that is, you know, recognizing that entering into emergency accommodation is always a bad situation, both for the person in particular, but also for the state, also for agencies. Your situation always disimproves no matter how short a period of time you're in homelessness, and it's very costly. And increasingly, we've been spending money on that kind of crisis rather than in prevention work. So if you look at what this in terms of public finances, what the state has been spending on homeless services, you know, it is increasing, but it's always on that emergency accommodation area. And then there's HAP on the other hand, where we're also kind of heavily invested in the private rental sector and to a degree increasing the pressure on it. So really, I mean, it comes back to that thing of kind of trying to increase the stock, which again takes time, but we really urgently need to kind of increase that. And that's the only way we're going to find our way out of this. So in the meantime, while we have this public health crisis, we really need to be keeping people in their homes where they're safest. I mean, that's the public health advice. And as Wayne says, that should be our priority. And part of that is to prevent, you know, people who in the middle of the kind of most extreme part of the crisis to kind of prevent people having to enter homeless accommodation. But part of it is also recognizing that the numbers go up and the numbers go down, and they go up and down in different areas. So people might be at risk in Cavan or Monaghan and not at risk in Waterford. And we should really be nimble and be able to respond to that. And at the moment, the legislation that we have doesn't provide that. It kicks in automatically when there's a 5 kilometre restriction. But, you know, even back down at level 4, level 3++, you might have restrictions on households being able to mix. So it's very strange that you can't have your mother over for a cup of tea, but you might be facing eviction into homelessness at that stage in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a housing crisis. So yes, short answer is we are very worried about it.
Yeah, no, and I think that it's very clear that there's both the public health, you know, implications of evictions, and also, you know, as you're rightly to highlight, and the absolutely devastating impacts, you know, on particularly families and children of spending, you know, any length of time in emergency accommodation is just, you know, it's horrendous. It's destructive. And therefore, again, it points to me anyway, that anything that could be done to prevent any number of homelessness should be done. And on that, Rosemary, in terms of, and I know, you know, we're part of Home for Good as well, the campaign to get a right to housing, a referendum, and put a right to housing in the constitution. In terms of this, the minister did say in the Shannon, at least anyway, that the constitution was an issue in regard to this, extending the evictions ban. You know, again, you know, I made the point earlier that, you know, clearly it's a short-term basis. It probably could be put in under the constitution, but it does raise again the issue, doesn't it, that we need a constitutional change so that there's no ambiguity around such a situation.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it won't surprise you that I think so. I suppose there were two kind of constitutional issues that I think the legislation kind of raised back in July. And the first was kind of the structure of the legislation. So it delegated a power to the minister to extend out the period of time where there was a protection measure in place. And that couldn't go on indefinitely. There needed to be new legislation brought in to do that, because a delegated power can't continue beyond a certain period of time. You have to have the whole Oireachtas kind of agreeing to give the minister that power. So it had a natural kind of endpoint. But then when it came to reintroducing new legislation, we were surprised that it was so narrow, because, and I think it's partly down to the timing of when that happened, which was, you know, we were down, the numbers were much, much lower than they are now. And a legal analysis at that stage would have said, based on Article 43, that there wasn't maybe as strong a public health kind of concern at that time, which would justify interfering with private property rights. Now, I think you could have made a very strong argument towards in the prevention camp to say, well, look, you know, OK, we're OK at the moment, but we're still in the middle of a pandemic. We're worried about a second phase. And what a moratorium on evictions continuing will do is protect people who are in home services, which is a congregated setting at the end of the day, and which is, you know, high risk. So I think there could have been an argument made. But as we know, there is quite a conservative approach to Article 43, which is where the referendum on the right to housing comes in. And I think if you had a legal analysis which kind of balanced out Article 43 with an independent right to housing, you might have a different conclusion in terms of that legislation in July. But it is part of kind of a broader hesitation which we have in terms of private property. And some of that is about the constitution, and some of that is about our politics and our kind of political culture as well. And, you know, I find it strange, because at the end of the day, being a landlord it's a business, it's an enterprise. And, you know, we haven't really hesitated when it comes to pubs and restaurants and cafes and bars and shops to kind of intervene and say, well, actually, the state has a legitimate public interest in closing these. But when it comes to the private rental sector, there is a hesitation there. And I do think that comes from the way in which Article 43 has been interpreted over the years. There is a sense in which we kind of forget that, you know, being a landlord is running a business as much as anything else. And I think trying to understand that, I think, will go a long way towards changing how we view the relationship between a landlord and a tenant, and how we view tenants, which is that their home is every much as much their home as it is if they owned it, you know, with a mortgage and a bank involved. I think we in Ireland, we have quite an outdated vision of what it is to be a renter and to be a tenant. We still think of it as this kind of transient thing, when it's not. You know, there are many, many people who are raising families in rental accommodation, and other people who, you know, might not be raising families, but it's still their home. And I think kind of changing that culture is important, and to try and kind of recognize that's how people live now. It's not all about home ownership, and it's not all about your three-bed semi-D and your garden. Some people live differently, and I think our laws and our legislation and our policies need to be updated to reflect that.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that the point that the culture needs to shift, and in part that is, of course, the reason for the constitutional change, the requirement is that this significance or the size of the seismic change that's required in our culture does merit that, and particularly in seeing in that idea of that every house is a home. And that's what it is for someone who's being delivered. Just to come to a close on this, Wayne Stanley from the Simon Communities, in terms of just will you be calling on, and maybe each of you could answer this as a closing, maybe two things. Firstly, will you be calling, or are you calling on the government to extend it for 6 months? And is there something that the moratorium on evictions for 6 months, and obviously particularly with, you know, we are coming up to Christmas, it's literally a few weeks away, and it just seems to me, you know, immoral that people would be facing potential eviction over this period. And but firstly on that, and secondly, is there things that people can do, people listening, to support or email their TD or minister in terms of encouraging them to extend the moratorium?
So we have called a number of times at each and every opportunity when the legislation has gone through, for the Oireachtas to put put in an amendment which would give that additional protection for the for at least a 6 month period. So if those opportunities come up again, we absolutely will be. And I think everyone in the Oireachtas knows our position. So if there's another opportunity, they should take it. In terms of the public, yeah, I mean, the more people engage on this, the more people show that it is an important issue, continues to be an important issue for people, the more power it is. We had an event today where we're talking about the homelessness throughout Europe. And one of the points that was made is that homelessness is a political issue in Ireland. In a way that in lots of other countries it just isn't. And the reason for that is because Irish people have voted on the housing and homelessness crisis. Irish people have spoken when their TDs or councillor comes to the door. They are saying to them, what about the housing and homelessness crisis? So no matter how good things have been going in other aspects of the economy, Irish people value the home. And that's shown in all the polling that we see. It's going back to the constitutional referendum when we've had those conversations as around possible constitutional change. It has shown that there is a lot of support out there for such constitutional change and for us organizing our society in a way that respects the home. So if people do feel that way and they're listening in and they want to contact their local TD or the local councillor or all of their local TDs and all of their local councillors, all of that will help. And they should engage in that way. I think that's really useful and really powerful.
Great. Thanks a million, Wayne. John Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, like I suppose similar to Wayne and Focus and and Rosemary there. We've all, I think, probably on a number of occasions advocated publicly for an extension on the moratorium, and indeed, when the original moratorium came to an end, we were saying that it was premature. And as we've seen back then in the summer, a second wave was not a certainty, but a distant possibility. There was a hope that we would come to some kind of return to some semblance of that word normality. And notwithstanding whatever positive interventions we see in the coming months, we are in a very changed situation, and that really behoves government to go for a medium to longer term view on this in terms of a longer moratorium. I suppose what we've found in recent surveys of service users and thresholds and private renters who've come to our advice clinics and who we talked to, is that 85% of those renters aren't in the private rented sector by choice, and that's because of the lack of security of tenure, ostensibly, as well as the issues of affordability, standards and repairs, all of those issues, and their preferences are home ownership, their preferences are social housing through local authorities or approved housing bodies. And yet, somewhere between a quarter and a fifth of all households are in the private rented sector. And as Rosemary mentioned earlier, has been the pathway since 2014, 2013 into homelessness, ostensibly. So I guess what people can do right now, we're at pains to really push out the message about our prevention services on 1800 454 454. So if you that's a naked plug.
It's
really important. Because we're genuinely worried that people may not know what services are exist that have been invested in by the government and also by the generosity of donors, but that we have services. They do exist. They are there, among other things, to prevent homelessness from happening in the first place, through advice, through the provision of web chat service that we now have, and through a very designated tenancy protection service through that 1800-454-454 number. So I guess that's my big shout out, in relation to what people can do, is to be aware that those services are there, not just ours, but also Focus and Simon.
Yeah, yeah. Great. John Mark, thanks a million. Rosemary, last word to you. What's your sense of, like, will you be calling Focus, be calling again?
We will, and we have been from the start. We would like to see a much broader protection, and we'd like to see it maintain itself and be in place for the duration of the public health crisis. I don't know that it has to be 6 months, but because there's a risk that if you tie yourself into 6 months, then you might find yourself that you need it again after that. Or on the flip side, you could see numbers drop very low, at which point you might run into constitutional difficulties where there isn't that justifying kind of public interest under Article 43. So it might be that you could approach it based on tying it to whenever travel restrictions kick in, or when household restrictions kick in. So there are lots of different ways to approach it. Or you could delegate a power to the minister to declare a certain area subject to your protection, for example, the same way you would with rent restrictions. So there are lots and lots of ways to do it. And what we would really like to see is policymakers really engaging with that and doing it now before we come out of the moratorium, and before we face further issues basically along those lines. We have definitely been calling for this, and we will keep calling for it, and we'll keep highlighting it as a necessary part of this pandemic, and kind of particularly where, you know, our home is our first defence. And with that continuing to be the case, there is absolutely no argument that people need to be kept in their home as much as they possibly can. And in terms of what the public can do, I mean, I think John, Mark and Wayne have kind of highlighted it there, but I would also just quickly have a little plug for the for Home for Good and for the right to housing as well. I think that's an important aspect of this as well. That's something that the public can get behind and can consider over the next few months as we kind of build that momentum towards a referendum. Getting that public support would be fantastic.
Yeah, great. And the website for that is homeforgood.ie. It's very straightforward, so people can check it out and see what we're doing. There's lots of information up there. We'll be putting more up, and people can contact. Again, it's no harm for anybody out there. Just send an email to your local councillor, local TD, and say you'd like the referendum on the right to housing. You support Home for Good. Very simple line would be a great thing to do, because it is important that they feel that the public is out there supporting. Wayne Stanley from the Simon Communities, thanks so much. And Simon Communities is doing great work. And similarly, John Mark McCafferty from Threshold, and Rosemary Hennigan from Focus Ireland, thanks a million for joining me today on Reboot Republic. And as always, we need you, the listeners, to support us to keep going as well. Sign up, become a patron, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And we look forward to talking to you all soon. Thank you.